take this opportunity to welcome those who are in our audience this morning. We want you to know we're happy that you're here. Indeed, we encourage you to open your mind and your Bibles as we study some things in just a few moments that we hope will be an encouragement to you. I also would like to add my thanks to Brother Buddy Steele and also Brother Steve for taking my duties while I was out of town, my classes and in the pulpit. I want you to know that I appreciate that. Had a wonderful week away to be able to visit my mother and my brothers and two of our children and three of our grandchildren, and got to see little Coy, who I hadn't seen since December, 5 months old. You know, I don't want to be, you know, say that I'm a little bit biased, but man, he's a cute little boy. But it was sure good to be with him and be with our son, and look forward to times in the future. I also would like to add that next week, Lord willing, at this time we'll be beginning our gospel meeting with Brother Laurel Solis from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Encourage you to come and be with us each and every evening at 7 o'clock, our regular times on Sunday. I don't know Brother Lowell myself. I've heard him teach a Bible class once, but used to preach in Bowling Green, Kentucky, where my aunt attends, and I heard him teach a class there once, but I know that Brother Solis will come prepared to do his job, and let us prepare to do ours, and that is first and foremost for us to be here and to invite people that we know, our neighbors, our friends, to hear the gospel of Christ presented. If you need an invitation to give someone, flyers are in the back, please take those and hand them out. Give them to people, put them up in public places. Let's let people know that we're having a meeting. I began announcing that on our radio program this morning, and we want to continue to pray for that end. And along that end, there is one day still left open in the meal list. Let's make sure that's filled before Brother Solis gets here. Today is a special day. Today is a special day where our nation recognizes the great job and duty of our mothers. And I want to wish every woman here who is a mother, I want to wish you a happy Mother's Day. Indeed, I think it's a day that should not just be celebrated once a year, but should be celebrated every day for the wonderful job that they do and the great responsibility that God has given them. I'm thankful to God that I was able to take my mother out on Wednesday for a Bible study and was able to do that. Usually I'm not with my mom on Mother's Day. I'm usually doing what I'm doing today. I'm preaching, but one of the reasons that I'm here doing that is because of my mother. So I'm grateful to her and grateful for all the things that she taught me as a young man that has followed me to this very day in my life. And I'm so thankful that she loved God enough and loved me enough and loved my brothers enough to bring us up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And I'm eternally grateful for that. And everything I do in my life as his servant, my mom and my dad deserve much of the credit. So I want to talk today about mothers of the Bible. And this is a subject the Bible talks a great deal about. It's not something the Bible is silent about. And we want to look at some of the mothers. And there are others that I could have added, but it would have made the lesson way too long. But I do want to acknowledge a couple of them and some lessons that we can learn from them. The book of Proverbs has a lot to say concerning the subject of mothers and children. And it probably, if you wanted a handbook concerning how to raise a child, the book of Proverbs could be a good place to start. The book of Proverbs has many timely teachings in them, instructing us as parents, as mothers and fathers, in how to bring up our children. In Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 20, the Bible says, "My son, keep your father's command, and do not forsake the law of your mother." I think sometimes we forget that the things that we do in our lives have a direct reflection on our parents. And I think there's no way to escape that. And everything that we do has some type of reflection on how we were raised. Not always. You know, not always. There are people who are raised in a correct way and do the wrong things that are not a reflection on their parents. But much of the time, we are part of our environment and what we were raised in and how we were raised. And so we need to remember that. Even though I'm now 60 years old, that doesn't mean that I don't have a duty to my mother. No, I'm no longer under her rule, but I have a responsibility to see that she's taken care of. And indeed, me and my brothers, we see to that she's taken care of, not because we have to, but because we want to. Because she was the one who gave us life, and she was the one that gave us direction. And God in His Word is very, very definitive that we have a responsibility to them even as they grow older to take care of them. And so I want to introduce by wondering, how did Mother's Day get started? How did Mother's Day get started in our country? So I went and looked that up. And President Woodrow Wilson, in a joint resolution in Congress, on May the 9th, 1914, exactly almost 100 years to the day, recommended that the federal government observe Mother's Day. The next year, the president was authorized to proclaim this an annual holiday. Though this is a special one-time event of the year, I think that we should honor our mothers on a daily basis. But this is one day that our nation has recognized the great duty and work that mothers do, and it's only right and honorable that they have their own special day. We need to also remember there's a few thoughts about mothers, and I put these thoughts together from things that I experienced as a child, and many of you can relate to this. You know, a mother is one who will nourish and love and care for her child. She'll do everything she can to give the best to that child. She'll do everything in her power to make sure that child is taken care of. A mother is a night watchman, as she keeps an ear out for their child's cry at night and will immediately spring out in bed to comfort her child if her child needs comforting. A mother is a doctor and a nurse all rolled into one. No matter what kind of boo-boo a child has, and only a mother can kiss it and make it feel better. She's the only one that has the answers to every problem that you have. She's the only one that will always be there when you need someone to talk to, when you need someone to share a thought with, or you need some instruction, or you need some help. A mother is never too busy to help her children. A mother is a timekeeper. She keeps up with all the events of her child's life, and she makes sure that they make them all on time. I know my mother must have felt like a cab driver when the four of us were growing up, taking us from one place to another, chauffeuring us around to wherever we needed to get to go, and where we needed to go, she always made sure that we got there. She's a chef and makes meals that are best for her children. There still, to this day, nobody makes a pot roast like my mother. You know, and I guess every son could say that. He has a favorite dish that their mother makes. And a lot of the things that I have an appetite for and are my favorite foods, have to do because of my mother and things that she cooked when I was young. Also about mother, she's a counselor and works with her children's emotions during difficult times. I can remember times in my life when I was going through different stages of my life. There were things I could talk to my dad about, but there were things that my mother had better insight about. The mother is a referee when it comes to disputes between her children. I know that for a fact. My mother had four boys, and we didn't always get along, believe it or not. And we had our disagreements, and we had our scuffles, and we always had to answer to Mom. A mother is a great encourager who gives her child what they need to succeed. I can tell you that personally from my own life, that my mother has encouraged me in any endeavor I've ever taken in my life. Has always been there to support me, has always been there in order to help me to do the best job that I can, and to always encourage me when things don't work out the way that I thought that they would. And that's the job of a mother. And a mother, she's greatly underpaid. She doesn't get any recognition from the world. She doesn't have any fanfare. She doesn't have any monuments after her, and people won't even notice her. But godly mothers have made a great difference in the world and in our society, and where would our world be without them? And we need to be eternally grateful for all the things that our mothers do. In Exodus chapter 20, very early on in the pages of God's Word, God places an emphasis on this relationship of parents. It is not very long after the nation of Israel is freed as God's people, and now they are a free nation on the other side of the Red Sea, that God directs them to Mount Sinai. And at Mount Sinai, God gives them a law. But one of the Ten Commandments, in the original Ten Commandments, the fifth commandment and the first one after the relationship that man has with God had to do with mother and father. It says, honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you. Matter of fact, if you would go and you would look at the law in the Old Testament concerning mothers and fathers and children, a rebellious child was to be taken out and stoned to death. Stoned to death, and the one that threw the first stone would be the parent. They would bring the child to the elders. And when it was determined that that child was rebellious, God said that that child should be put to death for the evil and that it might not continue in others. And so God took a very dim outlook very early on in His Word about how mothers are to be treated by their children. We are to honor them. We are to honor what they do. We are to honor who they are. We are to respect what they have done. We are to respect the role that they have in our life. And we are to demonstrate honor by how we treat them. We should treat them with dignity and honor and respect in every way and in every facet of our life. Why? Think about this very carefully, brethren. Neither any of us, not one of us in this audience, would be here if it wasn't for our mother. Not any of us. It is the reason that we have life. It's the reason that I have grandchildren is because my mother gave me life. Without that, I would not be here. I would not have an existence. And so I must never forget that. And I must try in every way to exalt and respect her. In the New Testament, God is very clear to back up this admonition in the Old Testament in the passage that you're all very familiar with. It says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you, that you may live long on the earth. Ladies and gentlemen, we live in a time when this has been greatly forgotten. When there is a very big chasm today in the respect and the love that men have for their parents, especially for their mothers. Just think of all the tragedy and all the difficulty that our nation has, that this world has, and how a lot of it could be eased, and a lot of it could be removed, if people would have the proper, and were guided with the proper love in a family. You know what's tragedy, brethren, is not every child has a loving mother, doesn't have a loving father. And that's a very difficult situation. And that's a very difficult hardship on a child, because there's a role that God gave each parent to play. And, you know, sometimes by circumstance, there can't be both parents. And that sometimes is a necessity. But it places a greater burden upon the single parent. Do you understand that today in our world, there are more single mothers today than at any time in our existence as a nation? There's more today than there ever has been. And again, that places a great responsibility and hardship upon them, because they have all the responsibility. Now, we need to understand that God expects that relationship to be respected in every avenue. You can be just as lost for never obeying the gospel than you can if you are not a very good parent, or if you're not a very child, you're not a very good parent, and you don't treat your parents with love and respect. That's a sin. That's not just bad, it's a sin. And sin is a transgression of God's will. You have to honor your parents. You have to love them. You have to respect them. Now, somebody has always asked me when I tell them that, well, that mean I got to agree with everything they do? No. I didn't agree with everything my parents did. But I never, ever didn't believe that my parents didn't love me. I knew they loved me even when I didn't agree with them. And so that's what we have to keep in memory. We must understand they love us. They care for us. And they do the best job they can. Are parents perfect? Are mothers perfect? No. But they love us. And a love will take care of a lot of things that we can overlook because of the love that they have for us. I want to just share with you a couple of people who are mothers in the Bible that we can learn some things from. And the first one I want to talk about, you might think is kind of an odd mother, but there's a quality that she lacked that mothers need to have in great in a great quantity. And it is Sarah. Sarah was Abraham's wife. And she was the mother of Jacob, of Isaac. She was the mother of Isaac and Ishmael. Now, she was an impatient mother. And impatience caused a lot of problems in the relationship with her children. God made a promise to Abraham in Genesis chapter 12. I want you to turn your Bible there for just a moment. In Genesis chapter 12, this is a promise that really is the Bible story in capsule view. And in Genesis chapter 12, and in the first three verses, God made this promise when he called Abraham. He said, "Now the Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house into a land where I will show you. And I will make you a great nation. And I will bless you and make your name great. And you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those that bless you. I will curse those who curse you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." Now, at this time, Abraham is 75 years old. And he is childless. And he is told that he is going to be a descendant of a great nation. And through his descendants, all the nations upon the earth are going to be blessed. And so, time passes. To be precise, 11 years passes. And Abraham is now 86 years old. And he still does not have a son. And so, he thought that he had a son that was born into him by one of his servants, his chief servant in the house, and he thought that that was going to be the heir, but God said, no, he's going to be directly from you. And so in Genesis 16, Sarah decided to help God out, that God needed some help since it had been 11 years and this promise had not been fulfilled. In chapter 16, verse 1, "Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, and she had an Egyptian maid whose name was Hagar. So Sarai said to Abram, now behold, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Please go into my maid. Perhaps I will obtain children through her. And Abraham listened to the voice of Sarai. And after Abraham had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Abraham's wife Sarai took Hagar the Egyptian, her maid, and gave her to her husband Abram as his wife. And he went into Hagar, and she conceived, and she saw that she had conceived. Her mistress was despised in her sight." You see, she thought she could help God out. She was impatient. God said, "I'm going to give you a son." And one of the things that we often find is that men think that God works on their timetable, and he does not. He works on his own timetable. And it was not yet time for Sarah and Abraham to have a son. But she thought she could help God out. And as soon as she gave Hagar to be her husband's wife, another wife, and she conceived, it seems that everything worked out because now he had a son. But it wasn't Sarah's son. And that caused her to be jealous. It caused her to have envy towards Hagar. It didn't work out very well. And then, however, this was not God's plan. This is not what God had planned. In Genesis chapter 17, look at verse number 17. "And Abraham fell on his face with a laugh and said in his heart, will a child be born to a man 100 years old? And will Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child? And Abraham said to God, oh, that Ishmael might live forever. But God said, no, but Sarah, your wife, will bear you a son, and your son shall call his name Isaac. And I will establish my covenant with him, and an everlasting covenant for his descendants after him. As for Ishmael, I have heard you. Behold, I will bless him, and will make him fruitful, and multiply him exceedingly. He shall become father of 12 princes, and I will make him a great nation. But my covenant will I establish with Isaac, who Sarah will bear to you at this season next year." Now, yes, he was 100 years old, and Sarah was 90. But at the set time, a year from now, in Genesis 21, Isaac is born. Now, let me ask you a question about what happened because of Sarah's impatience. Here's what happened. Her descendants did become great in Ishmael. The descendants of Ishmael today are the Muslims. And the descendants of Isaac are the Jews. Now, how did that work out? They're still fighting. There's still tension between those two nations. And that would have never taken place had it not been for Sarah's impatience. That she thought that she could help God out. She needed to wait and let God work His plan. And indeed, Isaac was born in Genesis 21. And then, after Isaac is born, Sarah turns against Hagar and has her sent away. And her and Ishmael are sent away, separated from Abraham, and we don't read them again being with Abraham until the death of Abraham. At the death of Abraham, Isaac and Ishmael will bury their father. But what I want you to see here is a mother needs great patience. Why? Because being a mother is a difficult job. Children are not always going to do what you want them to do. They're not always going to understand what you want them to do. They're not always going to react the way that you want them to react. And sometimes, you know, I think I can remember my mom telling me at times when I really disagreed with her, when I thought she was way off base, and I used to always remember my mom would pat me on the head and say, "Keith, down the road you're going to see what I'm trying to teach you. Down the road you're going to understand better. You're just going to have to trust me on this. I know what I'm doing. You're just going to have to let me do it this way." And you know what? More times than not, she was right. More times, in time, I understood. In time, it did all work out for my benefit. And in time, I was a better person for it. But we sometimes can be impatient. Mothers don't get, we need to practice patience with our children. They're not always going to do the right thing. They're not always going to say the right thing. They're not always going to act in the right way. But down deep, if we know that we do the right thing, that in the end, it will all work out. Now, does that mean that true in every case? No. Not in every case. I wish I could tell you that in every case it works out. It doesn't in every case. But the best probability of it working out is doing it God's way. And so, we need to practice patience. We couldn't talk about mothers, and we're not going to talk about Mary because that's a whole different issue. But the next godly mother that we would talk about is Hannah. Please take your Bibles out and turn to 1 Samuel chapter 1. If you were going to talk about mothers, this is a mother that you would talk about. Hannah is an interesting Bible story. And she is a godly mother who fully trusted in the Lord. 1 Samuel chapter 1. Now this man had two wives. And Elkanah and Hannah was his wife. And the other wife had many children, but Hannah had none. And the husband tried in many different ways. He tried to show great favor to Hannah because she didn't have any children. And look at verse 3. It says, "So this man would go up from the city yearly to worship and sacrifice the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. And his two sons of Eli, Hophnias and Phinehas, were priests to the Lord there. When the day came, Elkanah sacrificed, and he would give a portion to Peninnah, his wife, and to all her sons and daughters. But to Hannah, he would give a double portion, for he loved Hannah, but the Lord has closed her womb. And her rival, however, would provoke her bitterly to irritate her because the Lord had closed her womb." This is just another one of those illustrations why pluralities of wives are doomed to fail. And verse 7, "It happened year after year, as often as she went up to the house of the Lord, she would provoke her so that she wept and she would not eat." And so here's a woman who is deeply distressed. She so much wants a child and hasn't been able to have a child. And her rival wife has children. And then not only is that a bitter pill to swallow, but she provokes her. And what she does is tease her because she has children and Hannah has none. So what does Hannah do? Hannah takes it to God in verse 8. Then Elkanah, her husband, said to Hannah, "Why do you weep and why do you not eat and why is your heart sad? Am I not better to you than 10 sons? Then Hannah rose up after eating and drinking in Shiloh. Now Eli the priest was sitting on a seat by the doorpost of the temple of the Lord. She was greatly distressed and prayed to the Lord and wept bitterly. She made a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look down on the affliction of your maidservant and remember me and not forget your maidservant, I will give your maidservant a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and a razor shall never come on his head." Now, Hannah prayed to God for a son. But in that prayer, she made a vow. She said, if you will give me this petition, and you will grant me a son, I will give that son back to you, that he may serve you all the days of his life, if you'll just grant this petition. But you know what? Eli thought she was drunk and began to reprimand her and rebuke her. And she says, no, your servant is not drunken as you suppose. I am deeply distressed. I am in anguish. And I made a petition to God in the anguish of not being able to bear a child. And Eli said, go away blessed and may God answer your petition. And she went home and her husband knew her. And God remembered her and gave her a son. And his name was Samuel. Now, Samuel would turn out to be a very important player in the pages of God's Word. You know, sometimes people make a promise, and then when they get what they have, they don't fulfill their promise. Hannah didn't do that. Hannah took the child after he was born, weaned him, and on the 8th year, she took him up to the temple and gave him to Eli. And every year she would go back and visit. And she gave this son back to God. And Eli would train him how to be a priest, because he was a Levite. And he would teach him how to be a priest. And Samuel would not only become a priest, he would become a prophet. He would become a judge, and he would become the anointer of the first 2 kings of Israel. This is the son. Now, you might think Hannah is back where she started from. She's given this child back to God, and now she's childless again. No, that didn't happen. Because Hannah had other children. She had 3 other children after she gave Samuel to Eli. In chapter 2, verse 20 and 21. Now, Hannah trusted the Lord. Think about this for a moment. Think about asking, you're a mom, you're a woman and you don't have a child. And you're praying to God for a child. And you're telling God, if you answer this petition, then I'll take this child and I'll turn him over and give him back to you. Well, then you'd be in the same predicament you were before. But she trusted God. And in this case, not only did she give him to the Lord, he became a very faithful servant of God, and she was blessed with other children. But I want to share something with you today about her willingness to give her child to the Lord. That is the responsibility of every godly mother, is to give her children back to God. Why? Because God gave them to you as a blessing. God blessed you with them, and He expects you to return that blessing by guiding them, leading them, teaching them, and putting them in a position that they'll be able to serve God all of their life. Now, the one thing that has to be remembered in this equation is that each person has free will. And they can take all the teaching and all the upbringing that you do, and they can discard it later. And they could go and do things that you did not teach them, that you did not train them, that you did not want them to do. That doesn't mean you fail. Sometimes I think we are pretty hard on ourselves when our children don't turn out exactly like we think they ought to. That doesn't mean we fail. You do the best job that you can. That's all any of us can do. That's all God's asked. is He asks us to do the best we can in directing and leading our children to be Christian. And after that, it's up to them. You know what? You and I have them for a short time. And all God wants you to do is what Proverbs 6:22 says. Train a child in the way he should go. And when he is old, he will not depart from it. You give him a good foundation. Now, one of the blessings, one of the things that you need to never forget, when they have a foundation, they have something they can come back to. They have something they can relate back to. It's never too late. It's never too late that they might not turn. They turned away, they can turn back again. If you never thought they'd do one, they could do the other. But if you did not instill in them the godly values and the godly teaching in their lives, how would you ever bring them back? How would you ever have hope to bring them back? That's why we need to trust the Lord to guide them in the best way that we can in order that we might be able to give them back to God. And then there's another lady in the New Testament, or the Old Testament. Her name is Jochebed. Now, she is the mother of Moses. And here's a mother who is willing to give her child away in order to save him. She's married to a Levite. And at this time, God's people are multiplying in Egypt. And the Pharaoh begins to be fearful of them. And he makes them his slave. But the more that he gives them to do, and the more rigor he does with their slavery, the more they begin to produce. And they're growing and growing and growing. And Pharaoh puts out a proclamation that every male child that is born to a Jewish woman is to be cast into the river and drowned. But Jochebed, the wife of the mother of Moses, has the child, and for 3 months she hides him. She hides him for 3 months until it became difficult to hide him. And then what she did, she made an ark out of bulrushes. And she put him in it. And she put him in it and sent him down the river. Now, she didn't know what would happen, but he had an aunt and her sister that watched the proceedings. And when that child was placed in the river, the granddaughter of Pharaoh found him. And she took him to be her child and raised him as a grandson to Pharaoh. But remember the sister that watched all that? She said, "You want me to get one of the Hebrew women to nurse him? Yeah, go find me one." Well, who do you think she got? She got Moses' mother. And Moses was like her nanny and raised him and taught him and trained him in the household of Pharaoh. He was raised as Pharaoh's grandson in Exodus 3. That provided him a lot of advantage being in the household of Pharaoh. He was raised in luxury. He was raised without any need. He was raised to have everything, good education, good clothing. He had riches, he had honor, he was in a prestigious position, but his mother taught him about his culture, taught him his background, taught him about who he really was, and taught him about God. And as his nurse, she taught him about God, and 40 years after the day of his birth, he saw two men fighting, one an Egyptian and one a Hebrew. And he took up for the Hebrew and killed the Egyptian and buried him. And then went off and thought nobody knew. And then the next day, two Egyptians were fighting and he tried to break them up and they said, "Are you going to kill us like you killed the Egyptian?" And so now that he knew the word was out, he fled into Midian and he became a tender of sheep for 40 years. But then God called him in the burning bush, and you know the rest of the story. He became a lawgiver. He became the man that led them out of Egypt. He became the man that led them through the wilderness for 40 years while that first generation died. And all this because a mother was willing to give up her child in order to save his life. What's that demonstrate? That demonstrates love. That demonstrates great love for the child, that even though she did not know She did not know that when she gave him up, that she would have any part of his life. But by the providence of God, she was able to watch that son grow, to be able to teach him and train him, because she trusted God and because she loved that son. And that's a good character trait for mothers to have, a trusting of the Lord and a love for their children. That leads us to the last mother. And this is an interesting one. I found this interesting because I think she's overlooked a lot. Her name is Naomi. Naomi is a Moabite. And she was a Jew. And she had two sons. And one of them, they married women from Moab. And so, in the passage of time, Naomi's husband died. And if that's not bad enough, in the passage of time, both her sons died. And now not only is she a widow, but both her daughter-in-laws are widows. And now that she is alone, without her husband, without her sons, she determines to go back to her homeland in Judah. But what about Ruth? What about Ruth and the other daughter? They determine that they want to go back with Naomi. They don't want to stay in Moab. They want to go back and they want to be with Naomi. And if you read in Ruth chapter 1, verse 16 and 17, Ruth says, "Where you go, we'll go. Where you die, we'll die. And your God will be our God." Now, what would cause two women who are of Moab descent to leave everything they knew and to follow Naomi? The great love they had for Naomi. Here is daughters who are not the daughters by birth. They're daughters by marriage. And yet, they had the love of a natural mother for Naomi, that they're willing to give up everything in order to go with Naomi. Now the other woman, she is talked out of staying, and she stays in Moab because Naomi says, "I don't have any more sons, so if you wait until they're grown, I don't have any more to give you to be a husband, and you'll have better luck of finding a husband if you stay in your homeland." But Ruth would not leave her. And so Ruth left Moab, left everything she knew, and followed Naomi back to Judah. And when she gets back there, let me tell you what kind of woman Ruth is. Ruth is a working woman. She goes to the field. The first thing she does is she goes to the field and she begins to glean. And if you go back to the Old Testament and read what that is, that means that they took their fields and they would pick their grain, and then whatever was left, they were not to pick it up. They were to leave it in the field for the poor. And then people would come behind them and they would glean that, and that's how the poor people would get their food. And that was very hard work in the heat of the day. And she did that. But when she was in the field, there was a man that took notice of her. His name was Boaz. And he took notice of Ruth. And when she came back and brought the food back to Naomi, he said, "Who is this man?" He said, "He's one of your relatives. You go out there and you work his fields and you don't go anywhere else and you stay close to him." So she went back and he noticed her. And he made inquiry about her. And Naomi said, "He's your relative. He can secure you a future. He can secure you a future and take care of you." So she tells Ruth what to do in order that she might be taken care of. And so that's exactly what she does. She ends up going back, and Boaz goes to the city center and makes a proclamation that he's not the nearest relative. There's another man who's a nearer relative, and gives him the first opportunity of marrying Ruth, and he rejects her, and so he takes her to be his wife. And now Naomi is taken care of because Ruth will take care of her. She marries a man who is of Jewish descent. She marries him, and she has children. And you know what? In Ruth chapter 4, she's in the lineage of David. And if she's in the lineage of David, she's in the lineage of Christ. But how did all that happen? Because of a love that was demonstrated in a woman who not loved her daughter-in-law as much as she loved her own daughter. And they had great love for her. You know, my mother had four sons. Three of us are still living, and we all have wives. But I can tell you that my mother has never ceased to treat my wife, Rita, and my brother's wife, Peggy and Audrey, as if they were her own daughter. And you know what? That's exactly the way that God intended for it to be. And you know what? The love that Naomi had for her daughter-in-law was reciprocated in the life of Ruth. And Ruth went on to do great things. And so there are other mothers in the Bible that we could use, but these will suffice to show that mothers play a very vital role in the things of God. It's often been said that the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. And you know what? There's a lot of truth in that. Because there's a lot of men who have done wonderful things in society and in life and in our nation that never would have been able to do it had they not been raised by godly mothers. We live in a very wicked world. Children need love. They need guidance. They need patience. They need to be taught about the need for God in their lives. And one of the responsibilities that God gave mothers is to do that very thing. Godly mothers are a blessing from God. And we, as children, need to thank God for their godly mother and sacrifices they make for their lives. I want to tell you something today. If you were raised by a godly woman who was your mother, and she raised you to know God, to love God, you need to be eternally grateful. Because without that guidance and without that teaching, you would not have anything that you have in your life if it were not for her love and her instruction and her guidance. And you know what? Most mothers don't want anything in return except one thing. They want their children to love them. They want their children to respect them. And that they should readily do. Mothers have a sobering and important role in raising other children. And I pray that their tribe increases. I believe today, ladies and gentlemen, the job of a mother is even more crucial than it's ever been in any time in our history. I believe there are so many things working against our children in the information world that we live in, the communication age, technology, all the things they can get into, all the things they can know before they're ready to know it, before they're ready to understand it, before they're able to decipher it, and all the things that are bombarded with daily to try to destroy the things that God would have them do in their life. Their job is monumental, and it is very difficult. But I want to add this one thing before we close this lesson. Don't ever think, no matter how wicked this world gets, that you can't raise a godly child, because you can. You know how I know that? There was a lady named Mrs. Noah. I don't even know her name. But she lived in a time where every person on the earth was evil except 8 people. And yet she raised 3 godly sons. Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Even in an ungodly culture, when all the world was on their heart evil continually. And you know what? They found 3 godly women. Who were their mothers? I don't even know. I don't even know who the mothers were of the wives that the sons of Noah had. But that mother and Mrs. Noah were able to raise children, sons and daughters, in a wicked world and raise them to make a difference. Brethren, don't count God short. God's ways work no matter what direction the world wants to go in. And please, don't ever get discouraged because things didn't go exactly as you had planned. It didn't mean you failed. You did the best you could, and that's all God asked for. And you mothers, I want to thank you. Without your work and without your sacrifice, many things would not be what they are today. May your tribe increase. And may we always honor and respect our mothers. Please take your song books and turn to the song that has been selected. One of the greatest things you can do as a mother or as a father is to set the right example for your children. And the right example would be to we can do anything to help you make your life right with God. We beg you to come to the front as together we stand and as we sing.